The following presentation is brought to you by The Pride of ODU, the official NIL collective of Old Dominion Athletics. Be a monarchist. Join the Pride.
Monarch Nation, welcome back. We've got Coach Tennant McVeigh in the house for Season 2, Episode 1 of In the Lion's Den. Coach, welcome back to the world's best.
It's great to be back. I missed you guys. You know, it's busy around here right now with everything starting to kick off, but really excited and love to be chatting with you.
Fantastic. So let's talk about the end of last season. We had a very good defensive team that kind of just struggled to put the ball in the net consistently. So talk to us about how you felt about how last season went and how that transitioned into the spring.
Yeah, you know, obviously first year you go into it a little bit, you know, the nerves, the uncertainty, you know, the questioning of everything. You know, I think we had a clear plan of what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it. And, you know, I talked about this last year. The first year was all about building our culture back and really laying roots, not on the short term, but in the long term, for what this program's going to look like in the future. So, you know, I think steadily, you know, we started off the year well, you know, and then we had that lull and we had four really tough games against some of the best teams in the country. But, you know, the group stuck with it. And towards the end of the season, you know, we picked up some really important wins, made a little stand towards the end, made the tournament. And unfortunately, you know, you lose in a really tight game. You know, two times we played Marshall last year and two times we really pushed them to the edge. So I was really disappointed for the players at the end of the season because they really did come good. And I was proud of the, not the effort, but the consistency to stick with what we were trying to do and our message and, you know, what our brand is. And I think that really sort of clicked towards the end of the season. So to end it where we did was disappointing. But I think it galvanized us and gave us this the thoughtfulness to go into the spring and feel good about ourselves and obviously make more strides when it came to that development period that we have.
Yeah, I know I was kind of harsh with saying good defense, struggled to put the goal in the net. But the team was fun to watch last year. Competing with some of the best teams in the country, Marshall, West Virginia. So, obviously, a very good first year. I'll let Aaron go from here, but I just wanted to make sure I respect the work done by the team last year.
Look, I get it. At the end of it, I was looking earlier on. I do this thing called championship standards every year for the guys, and it's like, you know, what does it take to win the league? And statistically, what are the things that you have to be doing day in and day out? And when you look at it, we scored 9 goals in the conference last year. That's not enough to win the league. You know, we do have to do more, you know, on that front. The football had to evolve, and I think we took really good steps forward in the fall last year, but we really made strides in the spring. So it was a good jump start.
All right. So I know we'll get into recruiting and players coming in and sort of those sorts of things, but in building off of the wrap-up of last season, were there a list of things that you and your staff decided, hey, these are things that going into the offseason we need to do to prepare for next year?
Yeah, 100%. Number one was recruiting. And it was, can we now identify the type of person and player that we want that comes into the building that is going to buy into what it is that we're trying to do? So that was a massive push in the springtime. And even before Christmas, like after the season finished, now with the new transfer portal, we knew that we needed to do good business there. And then also, as we came back into being with the group again, could we reinforce the principles and standards and the things that we've started to hold around here and carry them forward through the spring to see more development on that front? Because it's always a work in progress. So on those two things, sticking with with what we were doing and not faltering on it, but also recruiting the best student athletes that we could, that we felt we're going to bring something to the table, not just on the field, but off it as well. It always goes back to that culture piece. So that's where we really started with everything.
All right. So before we get into the new guys, we have 11 returners anchored by our fantastic goalkeeper, Michael Statham. Talk to us about why these guys stuck around and what makes you excited to have them back.
No, 100%, and that's a really good point. You know, so many of them stuck around. You know, obviously last year we had some mercenaries that came in, you know, to steady the ship a little bit. But some of these players have been four-year players for us, Michael Statham, Mikey Eberle. You know, these guys have been part of the fabric for, you know, for the last 4 years. So it was important for us to keep as many as we could. This new realm of things, like other teams in the conference, other teams across the country, kids wanting to jump ship, use the transfer portal, fair enough. But really for us, it was, what is our product every day? What are they getting out of it? How are we, you know, helping them? And can we make them feel like this is home for them? And we had some really standout young performers last year. And to keep most of those guys, you know, we lost one player, you know, really in the transfer portal that wanted to leave. And, you know, I don't think that's the case, you know, across the board. You know, I think that speaks volumes of the work that the staff are doing in order to make sure that the guys feel comfortable. And that retention is going to be really important moving forward. On and off the field, is what we're doing here with our program something that is meaningful to the players? And I think if they feel like that, then that's obviously going to impact how we actually do on the field. Really happy with what we were able to achieve that way. And I feel like the guys have really benefited from that.
All right. So before we get into talking about all the new guys, I know that you're excited to talk about the spring and things that you guys worked on and those sorts of things. In the spring, what are the goals? What is a Division I soccer team doing during that time frame?
Development. You know, it's what we refer to as our development period. During the fall, the games come so thick and fast, and you don't have a lot of time to really grow skills, be really into the tactics of everything, because everything just comes. You're just really playing, recovering, preparing and going the game. So having a longer period in between games, and that sort of 8-9 weeks before you even, you know, kick a ball in a game, to hammer home tactically who we are, you know, and focus on all of the areas that we need to. And for us, we always say we focus on four key areas: mentally, physically, tactically, and technically. And if we build through all four of those areas and really spend time on and off the field getting better as a group, it pays dividends. And I think this spring was extremely important for me, because that was really the first opportunity with the group that we had brought in and the returning guys that we had to say, hey, here's our brand of football. This is what we're going to do moving forward. And, you know, I think we started the season last year with an idea in mind, and we had to quietly move some pieces around because of the position that we were in, but that evolved into something that we felt comfortable with and something that I feel comfortable with. And I think the guys really saw the benefit of what we're trying to do, and we could really focus our time on, can they technically do what we're asking them to do, and can they tactically do what we're asking them to do, and then mentally, are they bought into it and do they believe in it? So that's what was the most important thing in the spring for me, was how do we hone that football and how do we make it our own?
All right. So I wrote those four things down because my memory stinks. Mentally, physically, tactically, and technically. Is there one of those four that you find is the most challenging to really work on during that time period?
Oh, yeah. The mental side of things. College soccer is really unique in that you can have average players and, you know, an average idea about things. But if you've got a team that are mentally engaged, that are pulling in the right way, that are all together, like creating that mental toughness in them, you're probably going to win more games than you're going to lose. I do think spending time in that is something that's lost. You know, we love football. We want to coach football, but spending time building the character of the players, building the character of our leaders, and helping them then lead was an extremely important thing in this spring. And, you know, I've got a group of six leaders that I lean on a lot, and we do a lot of work together to grow in that area. And I think moving forward, you know, going back to that culture side of things, like if we are mentally tough and we do the right things on and off the field, and we can lead each other, we can hold each other accountable, and we can all pull in the right direction, that has more impact than the other three things combined. Now, you have to be well balanced, And the other things, I think are easier to come to, but that mentality piece of it and the psychological piece is so important, especially these days, with the youth of today.
All right, so we've talked about what you look for in a recruiting. Let's talk about some of these new guys. You had 16 players this offseason. The one thing I want to know is six of them are from Virginia. Always good to see that. Northern Virginia is very well represented in this new class. But the other thing I noted was some of these locations where you found guys is pretty amazing. Like you got a guy from Iowa. How do you find a guy that plays soccer in Iowa?
Yeah, well, so that one's a little bit interesting. There's two guys there. So Jamie Wynn, who's actually Irish, and then Colby Goodbolt, who's from Iowa. Both of those guys were NAIA players down in Alabama, and they play for an acquaintance of mine, Barry Farrell, who's another Irish guy. William Carey, very, very well respected Final Four NAIA team last year. I've known of Jamie for a long time, just with him being from Dublin and him coming through. And then Colby was one that was kind of thrown at me by Barry, and asked if we had a need there, and we did. It's using those contacts, and those NAIA guys got an extra year due to the part of the bill that went through. I think there was a football player that advocated for that. So, picking up things that are a little bit unexpected through your contacts and through people that you trust is important. Those guys were a little bit late and a little bit out of the blue, but really happy to have them on board. And I think it's great for them. They're experienced. They've played a lot of college soccer, and I think they're really going to help us.
All right, so I'm going to ask a two-part question. Give me two guys in the squad to watch out for this year. One for the very casual fan that doesn't really understand the game, the intricacies yet, that I should be looking out for. And then for, the guy who's been playing the game for 20 years that's going to come out and watch you guys, that they should be really paying attention to, that they'll appreciate.
Yeah, good question. I always hate to, circle out guys. One of my big things right now, and I've got to go across my whole back four, my back five, really, of returning players and, taking Don, Jed Akhtan, Evan Watt, Marcelo Randolph, and Michael Statham, who we've already really touched on. Having five players return, that started for you last year, that did a really good job for you, that's massive. So, they have a little bit of experience there, and I'm really excited to see how that group can come together. And to Mike's point earlier on, can we be really strong defensively? I'm really hoping, Evan and Tegan going into their last year here. For me, Evan Watt is a professional centre back, and I really expect him to have a standout year, and he's become a real leader for us. So across there, keep an eye on the big man. I think he's really going to stand out this year. I think, this year a little bit differently. We've got some new exciting attacking pieces. We added well up front, and Alex, Krajicek, who we brought in mid-year, has been with us for a little bit. If you watch Alex play football, he's kind of a little bit rogue and a little bit random, but he's very crafty. He scores really neat goals. He plays the game really well. And then Jake Lane, who we've brought in from Bowling Green, really good feet. A little bit different, can go at players 1v1. I think there's just an excitement there, in some of those attacking players. I think for the casual fan, Jake is going to be the most exciting one that way because of what he can do with his feet and how he can glide by people and put stuff in the box. And I think by committee this year, I think we've got plenty of good strikers. Everyone wants to see goals. Can those guys up front really help us and hit the back of the net? Like I said, it's really hard to pinpoint guys. I'm excited about areas. I'm excited about groups. And hopefully it all comes together moving forward, and everybody can contribute, because I do think this is the deepest group that we've had in terms of, there's nobody that I'm scared of putting on the field, and there's no worry there. So how can we all contribute? How can we all do our job? And how can we all make the team click?
All right, so continuing on with the recruiting thing, I have a question. So you got guys from Northern Virginia, a bunch of them, nine now, but you guys also have guys from all over the country and a bunch of guys positions. Is there certain areas that or regions you focus on to fill that role, or how does that work?
No, that's a great question. You know, I think to touch on the Virginia aspect of it, you know, obviously taking over the program, and like, everyone has their budget constraints. Everyone has their way of doing things. You know, we have a model that we've figured out that, you know, we can't go out anymore and spend a lot of money on the big internationals and things like that. We've got a budget that we've got to work with. We knew that in taking this over, we had to be extremely smart with what we're doing, find value for money in players. And at the end of the day, that starts in our state. So how do we win the state? How do we go out and find the best players, convince them that Old Dominion is the place to be? And I think we've done a fantastic job of that this year. And that's something that we will continue to do. And we, you know, we're going to turn over every rock to find the best players in the state. Aside from that, then, yes, there are certain areas of the country that you're going to have a focus on. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. Certain clubs that we might have relationships with where we know coaches or we trust you know, what they're getting taught, or, you know, what the message to them is every day. Certain cultures, you know, I love Northeast kids from Pennsylvania, New Jersey. They're just blue collar. And, you know, culturally, that's a trait that a lot of them have. So can we go and find the best players in those states that maybe want to get a little bit somewhere closer to the beach, a little bit sunnier in the summertime, all those things that go into it. You know, we took big Jack Actan from TSF Academy last year, and Jack was fantastic for us. And now in building that relationship with the club, Bosque, that's joined us this year from the exact same club, because we knew the type of player that we're getting. So yes, regionally, we will pinpoint areas, pinpoint clubs, pinpoint people that we feel like mimic our culture and, you know, what we have to offer. But we're not going to turn our nose up at anything. And we'll travel, we'll do all the things that we need to in order to find the best players. But I do think every program finds their niche and way of doing things. And, you know, this year it seems to have worked for us.
So last year we talked about this a little bit with recruiting. You know, unlike some sports, you're not really going to watch high school soccer.
Yep.
You're going to the club, whether Beach FC or whatever, you know, whatever these places are. At what age can you really tell that a kid is probably going to be someone that can play at this level?
The top players you can tell from a pretty young age. Not again, you look at some 10, 11, 12-year-olds and you're just like, that kid's got it. But then growth, you know, there's so much in between that, how they grow, how they mature, all of those things that come in between can really determine where they're going to end up. I think a big part, you know, in the recruiting side of things is, you know, if we're watching a player that's 16, 17 years of age and they're a good player, we're not just evaluating, are they a good player now? We're evaluating, do we feel like they have a ceiling? Have they hit that ceiling, or is there room for growth? And in football, in soccer, scouting is an extremely big thing, you know, across the world. Like, there are guys who get paid lots of money to go out and find the next talent. And I think there's a big difference in going and watching and being able to identify a player and say, he's a good player, but then looking at the player and saying, how much better is he going to get? And I think that's a really big trick to it. And, you know, I think you've got to really spend your time devoting it to figuring out what traits that they might have that are going to help them grow. So you can tell, and, you know, the kids at the highest level playing at good clubs, like, you're going to watch 10-year-olds out there and you're going to be like, well, that kid's going to do special things. But, you know, typically on our timeline, and our timeline is very different to the women's soccer timeline, because a lot of the women recruits, they commit their sophomore, early junior year, whereas what you'll find in men's soccer is the majority of guys will commit end of their junior year into their senior year. So the timeline's just a little bit different. I think for me, the biggest part there is physically, how are they going to adapt and how are they going to grow? And a 16-year-old, the difference between a 16-year-old young male and an 18-year-old young male can be massive, the same way that an 18 to a 21, 22-year-old in college soccer can be massive. And it's those are the, across those four things we talked about earlier, when you're evaluating, you know, that physical presence, especially in the college game, is extremely important. So we have to feel like there is growth potential in that area as well.
All right. Well, I guess that goes great into this question. So you talked about the difference between a freshman in college versus the upperclassman. And obviously you brought in a mixture of transfers and high school players. or freshman. How do you decide that balance?
Great question. We made a decision as a staff, you know, when it comes to the transfer portal, and I have my opinions on it. There has to be some kind of relationship for one of our staff, at least one of our staff, with a player that we're bringing in as a transfer. Have we recruited them on the front end? Have they played for us in another environment? Do we know somebody extremely well that has coached them before, where we can get a really good read on who they are as people? That bit me a little bit last year, and I think I pulled the trigger a little bit too quickly with some guys not knowing that stuff. So as these transfer portals rolled around, specifically probably the one before Christmas, which is where I think we did our best business, and I think I've learned that if you're relying on waiting until the summer transfer portal to get business done, it's not going to happen because money's inflated. People are paying silly money for, you know, players that you know, that's nowhere near the value. But I do think the balance of experience and college soccer games is important. But we have made a stand that we want to be a program that develops players too. So we're not just bringing kids in, you know, to fill a roster. What are they going to bring right now? And how over these next 4 years, you know, is there a pathway to the team? And is there a pathway to them becoming better people and leaving our building in a better place? So, you know, I think it's important to have balance. Everyone wants experience, but I do feel like there has to be that youthfulness, rawness about a group as well that has that space to grow.
Like Mike was talking about the number of players, incoming players that are coming from Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
So when you've got proximity like that, I imagine it's easier for you to get out and actually watch them play multiple times, get to know them, talk to them face to face, see that they're a good fit. So when you got, but when you got players that are coming in from, you know, Iowa or Denmark, Spain, France, is it common to not ever actually see them play in person before they show up on campus? And if so, or very little, if so, how do you hedge your risk on, hey, when this guy shows up on campus, he is who I thought he was?
Our general rule of thumb is don't take a player without seeing them live. That's the general rule of thumb. Now, there are instances where something happens or you are in a situation where that's just not possible. But, you know, if you take, you know, all of our players right now, we've seen them live. We've seen them live multiple times. There's maybe one that we haven't seen, you know, we hadn't seen on the front end. Just given the circumstance, we didn't have the ability. The American kids will watch multiple times. They'll be on campus as well. You know, we utilize visits. People bring their parents down. I want to meet families. You know, we'll take the time to do those things. You're obviously then communicating with the players on the phone. You know, a lot of them want to text me these days. I have no interest in texting. You know, I like to have a phone call. And if I can check in with them once a week or once a month, whatever that might look like, you know, and the staff do a really good job. So, you know, Nathan is our recruiting coordinator. But at the end of the day, all of us have a part in that. And all of us are going to be on the road. All of us are going to be building those relationships. And even then, when it comes to when we're trying to get a player to recruit, or even when they are recruited, then have we all spent the time getting to know that person? You know, it's not just me taking all the phone calls. Nay's involved, Spence is involved, and everyone really takes a role in that. And our players as well. We always get the incoming guys or people that we're trying to recruit. Hey, speak to the team, speak to the players, ask them the questions. They're going to be honest with you. They're going to tell you, hey, what's the coach like? You know, the kid's not going to ask me that. And obviously, I'm going to sell our program to the best of my ability. But the players that are already in the building, they're going to give them the real sort of raw stuff that maybe they're too, you know, afraid to ask us as a staff. So utilizing all of those different touch points that we have is important in building those relationships. But, you know, getting out to see players is extremely important. And it helps that we all love to watch football. You know, when we're traveling up to DC or we're going further afield or we'll go to events for multiple days at a time, we go to some of the big events and you're on the field from 9 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock at night. Great. We're getting paid to watch football all day. It's, you know, it's fantastic. So yeah, it's the most difficult part of the job, but you're watching football and you're getting to interact with people and you're getting to build relationships. So it's so necessary.
All right. So you talked about visits. This off season, you guys upgraded the team room a little bit. or I guess whatever, I don't know, I'm not sure what you guys call it, but it's an area that kids can hang out and just hang out together and spend time together and relax. Talk to us about the impact that has had and what kind of the response has been so far.
No, look, you know, I probably talked a little bit about it last year. Like, this is our home. You know, this is where, you know, this is everything that could be to us. And to have the facilities that we have, the field, the training field, to have our own offices, our own building, the guys are so fortunate to have this building that we have. And obviously over the years, things get run down, things sort of run their course. So, you know, it was important for us. And I wanted to put a fresh spin on things as well. You know, I think towards the end of Alan's career, it was an environment where the guys came in and came out, you know, and it was sort of transient, and I wanted to change that a little bit. So getting the locker room, you know, done last year before the start of the fall and opening that up so we didn't have segregation in it was fantastic. And then I had a really generous donation from John Higgins, who's one of our alumni, class of 72. And we sat down and John was like, look, you know, I want to help, and I don't want it just to go to something silly. You know, I wanted to leave, you know, leave a mark. And our team room was basically like a classroom. It had a TV, it had a whiteboard. You know, we did some meals and stuff in there. But yeah, we said as a staff, well, we finished training, we watch football. We want somewhere comfortable to feel like the guys can come and hang out and watch with us. And, you know, so upgrading the team room and gutting it, really, redoing the floors, fresh paint job, the big TV, the nice couches. John was so generous in letting us be able to do that. And, you know, now creating that environment where the guys, you know, if they come in for breakfast right now in preseason, like, some of them just don't go home. They just hang out here, they play the PlayStation, you know, we'll sit and have a chat. Then it gives us so many more opportunities as a staff to create relationships with them and for them to create relationships with each other and not feel like, oh, I'm just going in for training and then I've got to get out the door. So that's been a massive help. And I'm so really happy and thankful for John giving us the opportunity to do that. That was kind of like the last little piece with the building that I felt like needed to happen as we move forward and we transition. So it's been such a great experience doing that for the lads, and they're absolutely loving it.
When Mike and I were over there last week and got a chance to see it in person, it was clear that it is a place that brings those guys together. There were six or seven guys just in there and just hanging out and getting to know each other and relax. Where you put them out on the pitch and ran them through
haircuts as well. We got the barber chair in there, big Michael Wayland, one of our boys from Richmond. He's a wannabe barber, so there are some really bad trims. No, that's a little bit harsh. Mike does a really good job. He's actually pretty talented at it. But, you know, you walk in there some days and Mike has got four or five haircuts going on, and we let him, you know, put the barber pole up and he's got his chair. And it's just a little added thing that I think's great and the boys really enjoy it.
If I'd known that, I would have got trimmed up last week.
Come and see him. He's cheap.
Next time. All right. So Saturday, this is what you've been preparing for, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about Saturday. It's the first opportunity for Monarch Nation to get out and watch you guys play in Longwood at 6 p.m. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, a great opportunity, a dry run, not just for us, but for the staff here to make sure that we're ready to go for the season. You know, we've had some tussles with Longwood in the last couple of years, and, you know, we're not going to focus too much on them and focus a lot on ourselves. What is it that we've put into practice and what have we learned in these last 2 weeks in order to make us a better team? So, you know, it should be a great night. It's a good time Saturday. Touching on that, it's free on Saturday night. You know, there's no entry, so everyone's free. Come on by. I think everything's going to be as is. So they're going to have the concessions. Everything's going to be there. So bring the family out and watch. But it'll be a good opportunity to see the guys at home. The pitch is looking fantastic. They've been working really hard. And hopefully they'll go out and give us the performance that I know that they can give us. This is a good group. And I want them to go out and really step up, do the right things, get a job done. And, you know, hopefully encourage our fans and our community to get out there as much as they can this season. Because we've got some really big games this year. And the support from the community that we were able to garner and grow last year, I thought was, you know, a big part of why we did become so successful towards the end of the year. So it should be a good night for it. Hopefully the weather's good and It'll be exciting. Hopefully, we can score some goals and make people happy.
Free tickets for kids under 12. Should be a fun time. I've never had a bad time at the soccer stadium. Let's talk a little bit about the schedule. I'm not sure if we've talked about the building of conference schedules and or non-conference schedules in soccer. But talk to us about that process and how you kind of ended up with these non-conference opponents.
Great question. The conference schedule comes first. And with our conference, you have what I would say is a good travel year, bad travel year. So this year is our good travel year in the conference. We've only got one flight. We go down to Atlanta. Plenty of difficult places to go and play. But last year, we flew to Lexington, Kentucky, Orlando, Florida, and somewhere else. I can't remember. But, you know, three flights is that's cost a lot of money, and you're traveling a lot. So with having the better travel scheduling conference this year and it being balanced the way that it is, what it means then is next year, and this is where you sort of got to think in 2 year blocks. Next year, I have to bring a lot of teams here out of conference to balance my schedule. So if this year we go on the road quite a bit at the start, you know, we do have some home games as well, and I've tried to balance that out, but you sort of have to take some away games. And what we do is what's called a home and home. So you go to a program and say, hey, look, I'll come to you this year, no problem, but I need you to come back to me next year, just so that you have good balance in your schedule. And, you know, it's funny. Being what people would refer to as a mid-major, it's always extremely difficult. You know, some of the big teams, you know, if you take UVA, for example, UVA have like 14 home games next season because they won't go on the road. They won't play a home and home. They have no problem going up there, but they don't want to leave. And that you find that across the board. And picking up, you know, big programs, because coming here is extremely difficult, and we're going to make it even more difficult moving forward. You know, trying to convince people to come here, even, you know, we had some other teams on the schedule, and I won't name names, but we had some other teams on the schedule, some heavy hitters that called after committing to the game and said, no, we don't want to play next year. So it's always a bit of a, you know, it used to be back in the day, it would be a handshake. Yep, we're going to play, all good. And now you find that people will pull the rug from under you and, you know, benefit, you know, whatever it might be. It's a game of football at the end of the day. So we just try to balance it as best we can. But a lot of it comes down to the travel and how we can sort of pick up away games this year and home games next year so that it balances our schedule out.
So you talked about them pulling the rug out. That's got to be a little bit frustrating, but at the same time, it's got to confirm that you're doing something right.
110%. 100%. Yeah, there's legitimate reasons, but at the end of the day, again, it's a game of football, and I do not understand people saying, no, I'm not going to go on the road, I'm going to stay at home. It's part of the process. It's part of what you do. I think it helps make you better. And each to his own. But, you know, we've got some, you know, really cool, unique trips that we're going on this year. Some teams that we haven't played before, some teams that we haven't seen in a long time. And, you know, some guys that we know a little bit more about. We're always going to play William & Mary, VCU. You know, those local rivalries, you know, are run really deep, and we're excited for those games. But, you know, to get on a bus and go to Lehigh and Bucknell, and, you know, the guys have never played in places like that before, you know, and some really tough teams and tough places to play. So, you know, we're excited for it.
So we got a chance to talk about this last week a little bit, and you were telling me that there's a lot of conferences that are – their teams look very much alike.
Yeah.
They play very much alike. But the Sun Belt is not one of those. You were talking about how diverse it is and how the style of play from team to team. Can you talk to the fans a little bit about that, that may not understand that when they come out and watch us play Kentucky or Marshall, or that these things can look very, very different in your preparation for very different type of opponents?
Yeah, that's a great question. If you take the American football analogy, like, you know, you hear it on the TV all night, well, they're playing SEC football or they're playing Big Ten football. And, you know, everyone knows what that means. Maybe not so much me, but, you know, to the layman, you know, the people are like, okay, I get that. And it is the same for soccer. Some conferences have a unique, just this is what we do, and everyone tries to mimic that. And, for me, the Sun Belt, and this is, you know, credit to all of the coaches that we compete against in our league, everyone is strong enough in their own footballing ability, and they put their stamp on their teams, how they play, what they do. And to be fair, I think, to your point, the diversity of that, we have different styles in soccer that teams will play. The Spanish influence, tiki-taka, you know, the Dutch total football, you know, England for a long time were a very direct team, and that's how they played. And the Brazilians, you know, that are free-flowing football where you really don't have positions and people kind of, you know, float in and out. And I think each of the coaches in our league are educated enough, have been around football enough, are good enough at their jobs to put something on paper that works for them and can be dangerous. And that is probably the funnest part of my job, is that I get to go and watch teams every week and spend time breaking them down, figuring out what they do, you know, and I know that every coach in our league is doing the exact same thing to us. And that, you know, professionally is so motivating. You know, you play the sport your whole life, and it's a lot. It's built on respect. It's built on, you know, knowledge. It's built on what you're able to achieve. So to go toe-to-toe with the coaches in our conference every week, and it be a mental battle, not just you know, an 11-a-side game in the middle. It's like, how do we win this game? Or how do we break the other team down? Or how can we be craftier than them or smarter than them? So yeah, it's such a refreshing, you know, thing that you come in to work every week in the Sun Belt and you go, okay, what's this week's problem? How do we solve it? And what do we do about it? I know that everyone's doing the same thing to you.
So, Tennant, another thing we've tried to do on the show, because me and Aaron are not that knowledgeable on this great sport, try to find new ways for fans to watch the game.
Yep.
If I watch basketball, I tend to focus on the big men, because that's the position I played when I played basketball. So as a soccer lifer, is there an underappreciated part of the game that you think fans should maybe try to pay a little bit more attention to?
Ooh. Oh, how technical do I get here? Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think, you know, when we talk about football, we talk about phases in the game. So really simply, you've got attacking and defending. And then some people will break that down into certain, like, different aspects. You also have this portion of the game, which we refer to as transition, just like you would in basketball. You know, football, American football doesn't really have too many transition moments unless it's a turnover. But in soccer, there are hundreds of transition moments, hundreds of them in a game. And in transition, the game can be won and lost. And, you know, I like to think our teams have always been pretty good in that area. So I think if you're watching our team, can you start spotting those transition moments? Can you start spotting, you know, our ability to act quickly when the other team are unorganized, or get back and defend and work really hard? You know, that unselfish running, you give the ball away, can you win it back quickly? Or do you have to put your head down and make that 50, 60-yard sprint to get back in to position? That takes a lot of effort and willpower. So I do think that transition aspect is probably something, if you take it as a whole, that if you're getting into the sport, it's probably when the most exciting things happen in the game, because it's the most unorganized part of the game. So yeah, transition would probably be the answer there. Great question.
There you go. Mike coming up with all these knowledge and provocative type of questions to make us think. We're really trying to become better fans, and hopefully.
Oh no, I know you guys are. You're working hard, and I
man too.
I love when we get together, and it's, you know, we get those questions, because, you know, I'm being excited about the game. I'm, you know, being newer to it. You know, I want everyone to feel like that, especially when they come and watch our team.
Absolutely.
Oh, I have a follow up then.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Obviously, Premier League is getting bigger in the United States.
Yeah,
we're starting to see it on USA, like NBC, more like ESPN is showing more international soccer. If there was a professional team that mirrored Old Dominion, that Old Dominion fans should maybe keep an eye on,
ooh,
who would that team be? Like, to get a better idea of what this style of play can look like on multiple levels.
Oh, no, you're killing me. You know, it's kind of, that's, you're... You know, you're going out there and you're trying to mimic, you know, and, oh, we're going to play like a Premier League team. You sound like a bit of a... Yeah. So what I will say,
you were asked the question. You didn't come up with it on your own.
As I'm thinking, you know, because we do a lot of like sort of, we use clips and stuff for the professional sort of development stuff. But to your point, like Premier League, there's so much Premier League, but there are hundreds of other leagues, you know, right now. Like if you get Paramount Plus, like we were sitting here watching Carabao Cup, League Cup football here, you know, yesterday, everyone's into Wrexham. But the Championship in England, there's Bundesliga, you know, going on Saturday in Germany. And there's just so much football to watch out there right now. You know, so I think that's a, it's a really good thing for, you know, for people to be able to get into it and watch different levels of football. Oh,
while you're thinking about that, I will note that I did check out the David Beckham show on Paramount Plus and enjoyed it a lot.
Good. He's one of my idols. You know, grew up watching all the time, and he wore some questionable clothes at times, but he was a good football player. But you know what, Mike? You're gonna leave that one with me because I don't wanna dive in there, you know, because I think different traits, different teams. If I'm trying to, because if I go in right now to the computer and I show some of the clips that I would show the guys and things that we do, we actually use a lot of different teams and a lot of different phases of the game. So that to have one would be difficult. So leave that one with me.
Okay. I will note for those who haven't watched it, David Beckham has a show where he watches games with friends, and some of them are celebrities, some of them are fellow soccer players. It's a very interesting show. It's a lot like the Manning Brothers show on ESPN.
All right, I'm going to check that out, Mike. So I'm going to follow it up with a TV question. It's two-parter, Tennant, and I need you to be honest with me. The first part is as a new soccer fan, I have been watching Welcome to Wrexham. So just like probably a lot of other people, if I start to become a fan of that club, am I like a soccer simp? Is that not, you know, shouldn't be doing that? It's like very trendy.
The word for that, and you probably have it in America too, is bandwagoner. You know, when you jump on the bandwagon. Yeah. But no, it happened in America when Man City started getting good, and then people started wearing Manchester City shirts, and nobody knew who Man City were for years because they were playing in the second division. And then the Saudi money comes along, and you're like, okay. So, no, and I really do not have anything at all against people that go down that Wrexham route, because it's exposing people to a different level of football. And I think that's great. If you watch that show and you get to see not just the football, but what football means to people. Yeah. The community aspect of it, like what you have to understand is that every little town, every little village, every little place in the UK, in Germany, across Europe, in other parts of the world, every little town has their own football club, and the local people are what drive it forward and what help it. And, you know, when you get into these realms of things now where big money and, you know, football has become, is the biggest sport in the whole world, and it generates so much wealth. But every single Saturday, back home in Northern Ireland, every lad at my age even is still playing. They might be playing second team for, you know, the amateur league team down the street. Or it's just everybody plays. And to see that community aspect of it and what it brings to people's lives, put the Wrexham shirt on, scream, go visit, you know, and go and see some other teams and educate yourself. And because there's so many more little stories like that across the world that are so meaningful. And I hope that encourages people in America to get out and support not just the MLS teams, but their USL Champ teams, their local USL 2 teams, because there's so much football in this country now, and it is at a community level. So go and support your local team.
Yeah, I think that the whole community aspect and how they do spotlight that really is endearing. It's almost like the UFC have become so popular because they've been able to really spotlight their individual athletes and get people to know them as people, where boxing hadn't been able to do that for years.
Yep.
All right. My second part is, all right, they announced a new season, Ted Lasso.
Yep.
Smash or trash? Like smash. It or don't?
Smash. Yeah. Again, you know, I think that using football as a vessel for life and using that locker room to sort of, because we see this every day, like everyone's going through something different. You know, you're managing these lads and they're going through all these different things in life. But I think it's just so applicable, you know, to what somebody might be going through. And I love watching it. And my predecessor Alan hated the show because he felt like it should have been about football. And I used to joke with him all the time. I was like, it's not about, just watch it. It's not about football. It's about people. It's about, you know, through the love of the game, you know, and you can get some chuckles from it. So I always thought it was funny, like how much he just was like, no, it has to be more about football. But for me, I think it's a great show. And I'm excited to see, you know, what the new season brings. I've heard a few rumblings, but you never know what Jason Sudeikis is going to do.
And Aaron, since you do like Welcome to Wrexham, there is a spinoff based in Mexico now.
Just saw that too.
Okay, what's that called?
You have to look that up. It's the, what do you call the actress that used to be in Desperate Housewives?
Longoria.
Watched that one.
Eva Longoria. So she's like the Ryan Reynolds and the Rob McElhenney of Necaxa, which is a massive club in Mexico that have kind of fallen on. So I think it's, I saw some trailers for it.
What network is that on?
Same FX. Sure. FX, Hulu, Disney Plus. Whatever you want to call it.
Check it out.
All right, Tenet. We should probably wrap this up, or we're gonna get all three of us gonna get in trouble with our wives. Talk to us.
Well, we've got training tonight. We're on the field again at 7, so we got another little session before we go. So, she's gonna put the kids down tonight without me.
All right. So this season for fans, what's your outgoing message to them to get them out and cheer this team on?
Yeah, couple of things. Kids are free, under 12. Bring them. We're going to have autographs on the field after. We're going to do a team picture after every game. I want these kids to come out and look up to these players, and build relationships. I had a great conversation with a mother at camp the other week, and one of our players has become close to her son, and he's gone through a couple of things in the last year. And to hear that our players are having an impact on the lives of the kids in our community is massive. So we want to continue to build that. I would encourage everyone that has young kids, get them out here. And then enjoy the football, enjoy the atmosphere. These players that come to this university, you know, we're trying to get them to buy into something that is bigger than themselves. And, you know, to have that home field advantage, we talk about that all the time. Like, this is our home. We've got to protect it. We've got to do everything that we can. We're not going to drop points here. And to have that 13th man, so to speak, come out every week, and we love seeing familiar faces. And I just want so many people to get out here to see how special these lads are, because it's a good group and they're going to work for you. They're going to represent you well. And I'm just excited for them to be able to showcase themselves in front of our community.
Before you go and before they turn off this video, I need to know, you also made upgrades to the stadium in the beer garden area. It's going to be a better area to hang out in this season. So obviously you're doing a lot with the stadium to make the game experience better for everybody. Kids are free, better experience for the adults that want to have a drink or two and watch standing up. It's going to be a great season at ODU, and we can't wait to watch it. Thank you so much, Tenet, and go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.